My name is Mike Soddy. I'm a second-year PhD student at VCU in the Division of Epidemiology, and I'm here to talk to you guys today about a study we did on the relationship between college students' perception of peer substance use and self-reported substance use. So I have no financial disclosures or relationships to disclose. So currently there are about 19 million college students in the U.S., and about 13 million of these 19 million are between ages 18 to 24. This makes up about 42% of all 18 to 24-year-olds. They're a vulnerable population, so when they enter college, they experience drastic shifts in social norms. They experience new stresses they've never had to deal with before, and have basically developed new behavioral patterns and lifestyle choices during the college years that often stick with them for the rest of their life. One way of coping with these new stresses and new encounters is the use of substances such as tobacco, marijuana, and alcohol. Among this group, substance use is often interrelated. So cigarette use increases while drinking, and marijuana users tend to drink and smoke more. Students often, or even young adults in general, have often have different definitions of what a user actually is. One example of this is that they believe that social use does not count as being a user, or that you must purchase a cigarette to actually be a cigarette smoker. There's a pretty big lack of evidence currently on the perception of peer use and how it actually plays into self-reported use. So the aims of our study were two things. First was to assess the relationship between perceived substance use among peers and self-reported substance use in the previous 30 days. And then it was to determine if a relationship between the number of substances perceived to be used by peers and the number of self-reported substances used in the last 30 days actually exists. So the data set we used was the National College Health Assessment, Spring 2009. This was NCHA 2. It is available in spring and fall semesters to universities and colleges to assess their student population. It's a self-administered, self-report web or paper-based questionnaire. IRB approval is actually obtained by each participating university, so the data we actually received for this study was de-identified and was exempt from IRB approval. In total, we had 117 institutions and around 87,000 participants. The inclusion criteria for this study was those age 18 to 24 in U.S. institutions. We limited it to this inclusion criteria because those outside the U.S. or outside the age range probably do not have the same college experience as a traditional U.S. college student. The final sample size was then dwindled down to about 61,000. For the study measures, we looked at seven different substance use types. These were recoded as any use in the last 30 days, one or more days out of the last 30 days, or any use. The seven different substance use categories were cigarettes, cigars, hookah, other tobacco, marijuana, alcohol, and other illegal drugs. And then there were two subsets of potential covariates that we included. The first one was a subset of individual level variables that included demographic items, mental health, and student characteristic items. The second subset was institutional level, where it dealt with only institutional variables that were actually provided by each of the universities. So we used SAS 9.3 for all of our analyses. We calculated descriptive statistics and then assessed confounding and interaction. We had no interaction present and used a 10% change in estimate for the confounding. Personal alcohol use initially was only a confounder in about half of the models, so we reassessed the models, adding in age, race, and gender as historical confounders, which then proved that alcohol was a confounder once that reassessment was done. We did multivariate logistic regression modeling for each of the seven models, which provided adjusted odds ratios and 95% confidence intervals. And then finally, we did linear regression on two composite variables that we created between the number of perceived peer substances used and the mean number of self-reported substances used in the last 30 days. These two tables are our descriptive results. About 65% of the population was female, about 74% were white, most of the population was either in their first, second, or third year in school, and we actually had a relatively equal distribution of where each institution was located. This table is descriptive results for the substance use variables. Each alternative shading is a different substance use category, so the top bar that you see is just for smoking. The interesting part about what we were finding with the descriptive results is that there were clear discrepancies between self-reported substance use and the prevalence rate of what students perceive their typical peer to be doing. An example of this what we found was in the composite variables, where about on average students were doing about 1.3 behaviors, but believe that their typical peer was doing about 5.2 behaviors. So this was further highlighting that discrepancy between the substance use categories. These are our final logistic model results. Alcohol use came through as the strongest relationship. So for those who perceived their typical peer to be an alcohol user, they were 6.42 times more likely to be an alcohol user themselves as compared to those people who did not perceive their peer to be an alcohol user. These relationships were very strong up and down the seven different models, indicating that there's a clear problem and a clear relationship happening between the perception or the perception variables and the substance use variables. And then finally, we did the linear regression where we looked at the number of perceived typical peer substance use behaviors compared to the average number of behaviors actually being done by the individual respondents. So as the number of perceived behaviors increased, as did the number or the average number of behaviors being reported. So as an example of that, if you perceive that your peers were taking part in 5 behaviors, you yourself were doing 1.29 behaviors. So this trend we saw basically was significant using a Cochrane-Armitage test for trend and indicated that there is something actually happening between the two variables. So we saw these strong positive relationships between all the typical peer perception substance use variables and the self-reported substance use variables. The positive dose-response relationship also indicated that there is something happening, like I said, between the two subsets, and social use may account for part of this. It also could be that students are overestimating what their peers are doing and severely underestimating what they themselves are doing. However, the prevalence rates that we saw in this study were similar to what I had seen in previous studies. So basically, this further demonstrates that false perceptions actually do exist within the college environment. This has some implications as far as the way colleges are providing services to students as far as substance use and addiction. And the health services on the college campuses probably this might be something they need to take note of. We would like to do a little bit more with this data set to kind of look at trends over time to see if there's actually any change between the two variables and look at how they do interplay over time. As with any study, we had several limitations, being that this was cross-sectional data and a secondary analysis. So causality and temporality cannot be assumed, obviously. And students did self-select to participate with this data set. So as with any survey, especially one relating to substance use behaviors, there's a little bit of social desirability bias that's going to be built into it. So we'd like to thank ACHA for actually providing the data, and I actually like to thank one of my co-authors who's here and the other co-author, Tom Novotny, who contributed to this project. Any questions? Sure. How does that influence their individual behavior?
Right.
So that's kind of what we're looking at with this study. So we're trying to figure out if perceiving that your peer is doing a behavior, if that makes you more likely to do behavior yourself. And the way we would be able to do that is to look at stuff over time and get multiple years of this data to see if the two variables actually are truly interrelated over longitudinal data. No, it didn't. So we had variables related to student status, so living on campus, living off campus, living in your parents' home. It didn't correlate, or there was no interaction actually with the perception use variables or the self-report variables. So we couldn't tell if there really was. Does that answer your question? Okay. So. Typical peer was defined exactly the way I was kind of describing it. So on the question, it asked, let me make sure I get this right. So over the last 30 days, basically it was asking what the typical peer was doing over the last 30 days for each different substance use category. So the questions were in blocks, first by self-report and then what they believe their actual peer was doing. So it wasn't asking them back-to-back either. Is that something else? Is that going to answer your question, Risa? Correct. So that was up for interpretation. Any other questions? Thank you.